You're listening to The Record on KUOW. I'm David Hyde with Marcy Silman. A plan to expand the monorail in Seattle was pronounced dead in 2005 after five voter initiatives. But now, like a phoenix rising from the ashes, or a bad penny, depending on your perspective, the monorail is back. A campaign is underway to get a sixth monorail initiative on the ballot. And the question is, will you sign it? Joining us with a closer look at the new monorail initiative than you'll get from a clipboard in a parking lot is Eric Sigliano. His recent article about the new monorail initiative appeared in Crosscut. Eric, thanks for stopping by.
My pleasure, David.
So this thing has died a slow and painful death the first time. Why are people trying to bring it back now?
Well, partly because the monorail technology is inherently suited to Seattle's terrain and development patterns in some ways that all the other transit options that we're actually building are not. Perhaps the same kind of do-it-yourself spirit that led to a citizen-initiated, in fact, cab driver-initiated monorail effort the first time. And frustration with both the pace and the cost of rail development, and obviously with traffic situation in Seattle.
So with light rail, you mean in particular?
Yes.
Where would this new proposed monorail go, and how does it compare to the first idea?
It's fairly similar to the old Green Line proposal, but with a couple of key differences. It would go from Ballard, north end of Ballard, over the Ship Canal, along Inner Bay, and then along the waterfront, which is one big difference from the earlier proposal, to West Seattle and looking toward Burien, perhaps SeaTac eventually, and Elizabeth Campbell, its promoter, you know, would like to see it go up to Edmonds eventually.
Right. Remind us who Elizabeth Campbell is and what her role in this is.
She's a Magnolia activist, came out of planning issues there, came to attention running an anti-waterfront tunnel initiative. She liked the viaduct, ran for mayor as a dark horse in 2009, and gathered signatures both for a pro-gun initiative and for the district elections initiative this year.
So is there money behind this idea?
It's a personal investment, and not a lot of money, but she does not need a lot of signatures to get on the ballot.
Eric Sigliano is talking with us about a new monorail initiative proposal. Signature gatherers are out now, right? You actually ran into one in a parking lot.
I ran into one at the doorway to Trader Joe's, which I must admit is how I learned about it. I haven't seen more, but as I said, they've got time and a pretty low threshold they have to cover.
So the idea is to go from Ballard to West Seattle. How do they get across the Ship Canal?
This case, it would be a drawbridge. And that's a key difference because the earlier proposal was for a high bridge that could clear the ship traffic. And high bridge is awfully expensive, but a drawbridge is obviously will be stopped by boat traffic. And in the summer, that could be a big problem, especially for a what's supposed to be a, low-weight, really continuous transit system.
So you're looking to zip from Ballard down to West Seattle, and there you are kind of stuck.
And there you are waiting for some guy's yacht, yeah.
People might not be that familiar with the history of the monorail here and why it failed. You mentioned cost a minute ago. What are some of the reasons why, at least from your perspective, the monorail didn't make it the first time?
Oh, it's a long and tangled trail with many hands on it, kind of a murder on the Orient Express. The financing scheme that it wound up with was the primary reason that both the voters and even many supporters finally turned against it. It got saddled with a really impossible revenue source. It was based on car tabs, but based on an inaccurate figure for the number of cars in Seattle, basically derived from the number of cars in the wider Sound Transit taxing district, and that led to a projected 50-year payback and various figures. The one of which was most widely bruited was $9 billion in interest costs on a a little over $2 billion construction costs. So it became the $11 billion monorail. There was mismanagement. There was an inexperienced board, all sorts of tangled politics, and a lot of resistance in the civic powers as well.
So $11 billion. Obviously, Elizabeth Campbell and the other folks backing this have wanted to learn from the mistakes of the previous campaigns. What would this new one cost?
She's talking about a she's not offering very hard figures yet that I've seen, but a $2 billion cost.
What are some of the other pitfalls that they would like to avoid this time? And are avoiding?
Well, she thinks that you avoid a lot of trouble by not going through downtown. Neighborhood resistance also. Powerful landowners and residents played a part in that by going along the waterfront, taking advantage of the old viaduct right of way and filling a gap that's going to be left.
And speaking of gaps and landowners, the first time around, the Monorail Authority bought up all of this property, which they later had to get rid of. Mm-hmm. So would that have to happen again, basically, for this to work?
Oh, sure. They would be starting over.
Bottom line, what do you think? Is this thing going to make it onto the ballot?
I think it can make it on the ballot. I think that launching another transit system now is an outside prospect, but the original plan proposed by Dick Falconberry surprised a lot of people by going as far as it did.
So there's going to be enthusiasm out there in Seattle, at least when it comes to the signature gathering phase. But why is that? Why do you think this thing just keeps coming back, keeps inspiring people so much?
Seattle was a home of the original U.S. monorail and still has that monorail that's been touted as the only urban transit line that pays its own way. It's a technology that does have some attractions in the city of Seattle. Going elevated gets you out of traffic, costs a lot less than tunneling, and suits Seattle's hilly terrain and water barriers better than steel rail does in many ways. Rubber wheels on monorail, just like rubber wheels on electric trolleys, can go up hills that steel-wheeled trains can't go up.
How many cities now are making good use of monorails?
I don't know the total, but there are more, mostly not in this country. There's perhaps some not-so-good use that stands out. The Las Vegas Strip monorail is kind of notorious for both for the way it was built and the way it operates. But Tokyo has had a monorail going for half a century. Dubai, Malaysia, South Africa, I believe, and a number of other countries have also been building them in recent years.
Have you talked to any city council folks or Mayor-elect Ed Murray and gotten a sense of where our elected officials are in this?
I have not, and that may be premature. Nick Licata, who is still on the council, was, you know, the lone stalwart for the old monorail proposal.
All right. Eric Sigliano, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you, David.
He's telling us about a new Seattle monorail proposal. You may see signature gatherers when you're out and about, and you'll have to make up your mind about whether or not you want to sign it. You're listening to The Record on KUOW, and I'm David Hyde with Marcy Silman.